Hey everybody, Stephen here from The Truth About Dyslexia. In today's episode, we've got an interview with the amazing Siobhan. I won't say her last name just because it'll make more sense in the actual interview. But this interview is action-packed. We've filled it with a bunch of interesting stories. And what's really insightful here is about finding out about dyslexia at the age of 35 and how it kind of plays a game in your relationships with family and friends and the relationship with yourself. I really like most of these interviews. I don't know where they're going to go, but by the end, I'm like, wow, that was interesting. That's going to be super valuable. So make sure you listen. It is an absolute cracker. So let's dive straight in. Hey everybody, Stephen here from The Truth About Dyslexia. In today's episode, I have Siobhan Hatch from all the way up in Newcastle. I believe I'm getting that right, up in Newcastle. She's married to a Kiwi. I won't, you know, that's not the only reason she's on the podcast, but, you know, she seems like a fantastically awesome human being. Guitars, music, creativity, all mixed in with a bit of ADHD, anxiety, I think a bit of dyslexia, a bit of everything thrown in. But we're going to hear her full story, not just what I've invented in my mind. And, you know, just be aware we have a couple of friendly dogs running around each of our houses, so the occasional bark may appear. But welcome to the podcast, Siobhan.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm actually Siobhan Cousins now. I have to get that right. Yeah, we're married now. I have on cousins.
I love that. We were just joking about that. She got married 2 weeks ago, and how hard it is to change from partner to husband. Is that honestly, that'll probably be a year or two in the making, right?
Yeah, oh totally. I'm still saying like Siobhan Hatch on things. It'll take a while, definitely.
Awesome. Well, and as I said before this, we'll just kind of go through a bit of your story, just chat how you started out in life, what it was like, you know, before you kind of find out about neurodiversity and about the way, you know, your mind works and everything. You know, shall we start at the beginning?
Yep, sure. So I've got, it's 35 years I've got of not knowing. It's definitely been an emotional roller coaster. I think that's putting it lightly as well. I think I was in year, I think I was about 6 or 7 when I started to realize that the way that I think and the way that I understand things, it was different from other people. And I always had trouble understanding what I think others would just see as like a normal, easy thing to do, like an easy task of just like a direction, like go in here or go in there. And for me, I wouldn't understand it, or reading something that like the rest of the class would just be full on like getting it, and I wouldn't. But we didn't have much help or support back then, and I remember being, one of my teachers calling me lazy, stupid and lazy, and telling me to sit down. And when I look back, I mean, I was six or seven years old, which is like the same age as my youngest son. And I can't imagine like if any of his teachers said that to him, like how he would feel. And I remember that day. I remember getting up from my chair, going over to my teacher, trying to ask for help, and her telling me that sit, you're stupid, you're lazy, go and sit down. And you know what I mean? That's stuck. And I don't know if that was like a pivotal moment, is that the word, where
traumatic.
I remember that moment, and I didn't ask for help after that. I like refused to ask for help. I didn't put my hand up in class, and I didn't ask for help from the teachers. And pretty soon I started like not going to school. I started faking being sick. I hated it. I hated school. And I don't want to like speak ill of my parents or anything, but you know, my dad, he worked a lot, and he didn't really have much to do with like the schooling side. He was sort of, you know, my mum took care of like the school situation, the kids after school. My dad worked, you know, early in the morning till late at night. So he didn't really have much to do with that kind of, you know, the whole, you know, the schooling process, I guess. But I'll tell you, the things that I excelled in at school were PE. I loved it, loved sport, loved PE, drama, music, and art. So everything that you could like physically do, I did well in. Sports, I've always done well in. I played rugby and basketball in senior school for a little bit, and I've done swimming since I was a tiny kid. I used to compete in competitions and stuff. So sport was quite a big thing, and music has always been in the background. It's always something I've done, but I've never thought it would take me anywhere until like quite recently. Never thought I'd get into university. Not a chance. I didn't go to school. I got to senior school and I pretty much just refused to go. I hated it. I wasn't learning anything. And I just didn't go. I just refused to go to school. My mum was being like pulled in, you know, saying that, you know, she was going to get fined and things like that. And honestly, I can't ever remember anyone asking me, like, why don't you want to go to school? What is it? What is there something going on there? I honestly cannot remember anyone asking me why. It was always just, you need to go to school. You need to get an education. Your mum's going to get in trouble if you don't go to school. You know, there wasn't,
my God.
I don't really kind of feel supported or anything, you know?
I love that. And I think that, you know, that's so important for yourself and listeners. You know, one is talk to your kids and ask them why. You know, I watch my fiance ask her daughter actually those questions. And it's amazing. It is beautiful because, you know, especially for the neurodiverse, everything is about purpose and why. If you don't, not only is it what's their one, what's motivating them extrinsically or intrinsically is the fancy words, but also like if you're trying to get someone to do something, if you don't give them a true reason behind it, you know, just do it is not ever going to elicit the response of happiness and yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, actually we feel that our youngest has autism, so that's definitely not, we encourage him with everything, even if the tiniest thing, you know, it could be the easiest, simplest thing, and we'll encourage him and tell him like how amazing it is and things that, you know, just, you know, I didn't get that. So I'm making sure that my kids do get that, you know?
Oh, it's beautiful. I love it. And I think this is the key, is that we are in a generation which is open. It's listening, it's learning. Like the amount of late, you know, diagnosis of neurodiversity, dyslexia, ADHD, autism is remarkable. And, you know, it's beautiful to be able to love your child like that, because, you know, give it 30, 40, 50 years ago, it wasn't quite the same, right?
No, oh, totally. Yeah. So yeah, it was that, well, that was my school. That was my school years. I mean, I left, I ended up in like a special educational needs school. It was mainly for children who like didn't want to go to school, who had been bullied or suspended or something, you know. But we didn't have, you only get, when you do your GCSEs, you only get like your three main ones, is math, science and English. And I failed all three. I came out with zero GCSEs. So I knew kind of whatever I wanted to do, I had to kind of start from scratch and kind of be like, right, what is it that I want to do? And I honestly didn't know. I was kind of lost. I ended up being a lifeguard, like because of the years of growing up swimming, I knew that, okay, I'm going to try out for my lifeguard. And, you know, and I ended up being a lifeguard for 7 years. That was pretty fun. And again, music was always in the background. It was something that I always turned to at my time of, I don't want to say despair, but it's, if I felt down, I would write a song, I would write poems, I would write songs. And this was the most baffling thing to me when I got my diagnosis recently, because I honestly had no idea about dyslexia. I not ever read about it or anything. But what I thought it was like, it was someone who couldn't read or write. So I was like totally baffled, but I write songs. How is this possible? And like just listening through the podcast, through doing like my own research, and especially reading up on like dyslexic musicians, like I have learned so much in this past month. It's opened my mind so much to just how amazing dyslexia is. And it has its challenges, but I'm like, wow, no, all these things are like, these are really cool things, like traits to have.
And here's a quick question, just to break your thought pattern, because it's sort of fun, is where, you know, so how did you go from not knowing you had dyslexia? Was it, what drove you to get the diagnosis? You know, what kind of got you to that point? Have you been officially diagnosed or just self-diagnosed?
Yes. Where are you kind of at? I've been officially diagnosed. It was the university. So I'd been out of like education for years. I'd had my children, and after I've had my kids are in school, and I'm like, right, I'm doing something for me. I'm going into music. I've always wanted to do that. So here I go. And like, I got into uni. I never thought I would. I got into uni based on my auditions, not because I've got no GCSEs. So they said, right, we just like sing this song and this song, and, you know, show your range and, you know, and all this. And I got in based on that. So I was buzzing, like it was amazing. But when it got to the like the theory side of music, like learning music theory and reading, like doing piano and reading the sheet music, that was when I was like, I can read it, but I'm so slow. Like no one's gonna have time to listen to me play one key at a time. I'm gonna be there for about half an hour trying to play this piece of music. And I was really struggling with like time signatures, and just a whole bunch of stuff on music theory. And like I was doing a load of stuff at home as well on my grades, my music theory grades. And I found I got through grades 1 and 2 totally fine. And then it was like a block, and nothing was getting in. I think we go up to grade 5 in music theory in uni, I think. And it was just like nothing was getting in. It really was just like a block. I could do grades 1 and 2, but anything further, my brain just was not processing that. And anything to do with referencing, when you're referencing like an essay. Well, that was torture. That was utter torture. And I had to get Andy, he proofreads all my work, and he's really good with grammar and things like that, and I'm not. Getting all this help like from people at the uni as well, and they started to pick things up, and they were the ones who got me the help that I eventually got. And yeah, they've been amazing. They've been absolutely amazing.
That's amazing. And you know, when you think about it, this is what we're seeing so often, is adults getting diagnosed, you know, in the late 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, it's remarkable, right? It's like to think that this wasn't picked up, this wasn't understood, you know, whatever the label is, it's like, you know, it's mind blowing. And, you know, and so you've probably, you know, what I kind of see a lot is someone gets diagnosed, they then go through this moment of complete absorption, where you kind of research everything that exists, and this energy comes through your body, and you just want to know everything. And you know, is that kind of what it's been like a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually went through, and I can only describe it as like a grieving process. I felt like I was grieving for something in the first couple of weeks of my diagnosis. And it actually, in the end, because I thought I was going crazy, I ended up reaching out to one of the like the well-being people at university, and I told her about it, and she made me realize that that what you're going through is completely normal, and you're grieving for this little girl that just spent the rest, you know, the best part of 35 years struggling through school and jobs and life, you know, just struggling, and you've now, you know, you've believed for so many years that you were stupid and thick because that's what you were told. And all of a sudden it's like, no, you're not. That realization of like, I'm not thick. I'm not stupid. Like, it's just the way my brain works. Oh my God. That realization was amazing.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And I think this is such an important message, because so many people out there kind of don't even see it, but that when someone else sees it in them, you know, that's usually the moment where they may have wondered, they may have gone, I do mix up words, but it's not bad. I can't be dyslexic, because everyone thinks dog and God, and you know, they think all these terrible stereotypes, and then someone goes, actually, that's not what dyslexia is. And it's game changer. It's like somebody drops the mic and you're like, really? Could someone have told me this a little bit earlier, right?
Absolutely. It was like a puzzle, like having a puzzle. And then like, I was looking back at times in my life and I'm like, putting this puzzle together. That's why I do that. That's why that happened. Yeah. It was, oh my God, it was surreal.
That's the key thing where you're kind of going through that grieving process. And I don't know about you, I had this a lot more with ADHD, but it was like your brain kind of sits there and it goes back through all those visual memories and it tries to ask yourself the question, did dyslexia affect that? Did dyslexia affect that? And it's like your brain is actually trying to process so much over that week or two that it's kind of like just overwhelmed and overloaded. And it's like,
absolutely. Oh my God. Yes. Oh my God. And I found out the first thing I did when I got my diagnosis, I rung my dad because like my son's autistic and one of my nephews is autistic. We've always kind of thought that my dad and my brother may have been, and it's been mentioned, but they're undiagnosed. But the first thing I did was ring my dad because he has trouble reading and writing. And then it was like I said with the puzzle, and I said, right, so dad, I've got my diagnosis back. And he's like, right, go on then. And I was like, it's dyslexia. And the first thing he said was, I really thought you were going to take after your mum. And I was like, dad, are you dyslexic? And he went, yeah. I was like, why didn't you say? But
it's mind numbing, right? Like but it just shows you, like, it's hereditary. It goes through the ranks. You know, I've got a friend who's got ADHD, wasn't actually told. His parents got him diagnosed as a kid, but they thought it would be better if he didn't know. So they left it 28 years. Yeah. And he's like, you could have brought this to my attention earlier. You know, how's that conversation gone with your family since you've started having it?
With my dad, you know what? We had the best talk. It was like we spoke about everything. He doesn't talk about, he's proper old school. He doesn't talk about his feelings, you know, when they found out it wasn't anything that, I don't think there was any help back then. It was just, you were seen as like the naughty kid or the stupid kid and you just got on with it. I mean, we're talking like the 70s, I think. 60s, 70s time. So, you know, he just kind of got on with it. And like his family as well, like my nan and granddad, I don't think they would have been too on board with it either, sort of thing. It's quite an old school family. But we had the best conversation. Like I told him about the things that I like struggled with in school and the things I don't even think he knew. We just had the best conversation really talking about it. And but he made me feel so good. Like he was like, well, look at what you've done. You know, you're in university, you've done this, you've done that, you know, you're fine. It's, you know, you're right.
I love that. And it mimics my story with my dad. The minute I worked out, you know, my neurodiversity and started to understand it, you start to have different levels of conversations with your parents.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and like, it's like you had this, my dad's the same, doesn't talk about his emotions and feelings. My parents split up over it. Like that was how bad it got. And so when when I had that conversation with him and I could speak on his language, and I started going, how did you learn to read, Dad? And he goes, oh, mnemonics. And yeah, he's from Sheffield originally. So he's up.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He's English. And he said, like, if he hadn't learned through mnemonics, he would never have even gotten close. And it wasn't like, you know, and the same thing, but we could talk on a new level. And I also had an appreciation for the challenges he had and how he struggled to communicate with me as a kid, which I'm sure I held anxiety and resentment to. I'm not
sure. Absolutely.
Did you ever have that kind of interesting relationship when you were young?
Absolutely. Like, I didn't have much of a relationship with my dad or my mum, to be honest. My mum, I don't even know. I don't know. I know that I didn't have much of a relationship with my dad. He worked a lot. He was like, he did his thing. He worked. So we only saw him at weekends. And then even then it was like, right, that was his, he watched Formula One or football, you know what I mean? And that was dad's time. So we went out to play. So, we only really had, you know, on holidays sort of thing, you know, like that was when we spent quality time together. He was very, very old school. We had, you know, we went away, like every year we went to like a caravan holiday, and, you know, we had obviously the school holidays, we all went somewhere together. That was our family time. Other than that, we were with mum and she had stuff going on, you know, she raising me and my brother, couldn't have been easy.
My gosh. This is the important conversation we're having, is that as people get diagnosed, it opens up communication channels with your family and sometimes friends as well. Like, you know, if you haven't already gone through the starting to pick your friends out who could be dyslexic, you know, that's the next stage. I'm pretty sure it could start a 7 stages of dyslexia. Because it's like you go, are you? And you've got to be so careful, because if you, it's kind of like spooking a cat. If you go, you're dyslexic, they just get spooked and run away. So
I have done that. I've had some conversations with my friends, and they've picked up the same. Like, oh, I do that. I'm like, really? You know.
I love that. It's so true. And so, you know, continuing with your story, now that you've found this out. And you're at university, how do you think this is all going to change your life going forward?
It's already changed. Like, one of the biggest things, the most annoying thing for me as a vocalist, and is the memory processing is the memory processing is the biggest thing that I suffer with. And I forget my lyrics, even to my own songs. All the time. I'll be fine when if I'm by myself and I'm practicing in our music room / dining room, you know, and it's just me and Andy plays the bass, so like we'll just jam together, and I'm totally fine. But if I'm in the studio with our band, I've got to have lyrics there, and I used to think, oh, they're just like my comfort blanket, and I would just kind of go to them when I need them. But it was, I don't know if it's like pressure and anxiety, and there's still that self-doubt there that, you know, what are people thinking? Like, they probably think I'm really rubbish because I can't remember the lyrics, and, you know, it's a lot going on. But now I know why I do that. It's, I'm not putting as much pressure on myself. I'm like, right, okay, if I get the lyrics wrong, I get the lyrics wrong. That's just how it's going to be. You know what I mean? I can't do anything about that. Instead of thinking I'm stupid for forgetting the lyrics, it's okay, well, this is why. I know the university, they're putting on my laptop, they're putting some programs on there for me to use, like for mainly for essays, I think. I think it's like audio something.
And I think the key of what you're saying, and this is the important thing for everyone, is this level of awareness. You know, it seems so fluffy for people that don't really, you know, it just seems so fluffy that awareness could make such a difference. But my gosh, it's the pat on the back that you've wanted for years and years and years. And like, you know, one thing I did notice is around, like, you know, you talk about having intense anxiety. And I think, you know, this is the story I hope comes out more and more, is for people who have that anxiety, there is a root to it. There's something beneath it. It's not just, you know, you've got anxiety. You know, anxiety is the outcome of something else. It's not, you know, it's the way your brain works. It's kind of that neurodiversity kind of bubbling up. And until you understand that, like, and what will happen, I hope for you, is you'll start to be able to put the pieces together, and you'll kind of find these little workarounds that aren't, you know, you solving a problem, but you adjusting the world to match your brain, right?
Yeah, that is exactly it. And that's what I want to go out doing. Like, as a musician, I want other people to, like, not grow up with this amount of anxiety and this amount of self-doubt. I if anything comes out of this, I want them to, you know, to not feel the way that I felt for so many years. I'd like them to see me kind of out there and be like, you know what, if she can do it, I can do it. That's my thing. That's what I would love to come out of this, you know.
And that's a huge part. And to be honest, that's a huge part of it. And everyone around the world, everyone who finds out about it, stands up for it. You help a couple of people, you know, that's the game changer, you know. And I think for where you're going, it's in life, it's going to change the game. You know, it's going to change the playing field. And to start to, you know, start to realize that there's nothing wrong with you. You're perfect as you are. Your brain has developed differently in a good way. You know, without people like us, you know, the world would never move forward. No one would be able to solve the problems, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And that's awesome. And, you know, is there any, so, you know, just at the end of these podcasts, what I do ask is, you know, now that you found out about dyslexia, is there any questions you have for me that the audience may also want to ask? I've kind of put you on the spot here, but is there anything that you've been researching or considering you'd like to know?
I'd like to know if there's any other musicians with dyslexia that are watching this podcast, like, to please get in touch with me, because I'd love to learn more about how you, what you do, like how you're making it out there and what you're doing. Sorry, my kids are...
No, don't worry. Kids, dogs, animals. We're nearly... I'll connect you with Jimmy Franklin, who was on the podcast a few weeks back, who's a rocker from New Jersey.
I saw that podcast. That was what got me, like, oh my God, yeah, I need to. I have sent him a message. I don't think he goes on Facebook that much, but.
No, I'm probably going to do another podcast. I'll do a podcast with him in a few weeks. So I'll make sure I had him up.
Most give him a nudge. Yeah.
Like, and I think this is the key thing. Like, there is a lot of musicians out there that are neurodiverse, because, you know, it's the way their brains work, makes them creative, makes them powerful, and sharing those tips on how they get through it. You know, I'm sure, you know, the one thing I've learned about everyone with dyslexia is we're probably too giving. It's probably our fault, is that.
Oh my God. Yes. We're too kind. We're way too kind.
There's and this is the challenge. It's the balance between, and it was funny, I was chatting to someone about this the other day. It's the balance between us trying to look after ourselves and look after other people. We were missing the scales. You know, we're missing the scales of going, you know, how do we look after ourselves and others at the same time? We just don't have the weights right. It kind of goes like this on, like, more of a floating pavilion, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. No, thank you so much, Siobhan. Thank you for having me. And thank you for reaching out. Like, this is important. Like, it's sharing everyone's story from around the world is golden. And, you know, we all learn by stories. You know, dyslexic mind is visual. It's about hearing and imagining. And it's about creating. So thank you again. Is there any last thing you'd like to say to the lovely people who are listening?
Hi.
there's no right or wrong answer. It's just is there anything you'd like the you of 3 months ago to hear from yourself now that you know?
Just that, you know what? keep going. If I could go back in time and tell that little girl anything, it would be, do not listen to anything they're saying. You've just keep going and you're going to do great things. Just keep going.
Thank you so much for being on the pod.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Just before you go, I just want to let you know that we've rebranded the Confident Dyslexic to be the Truth About Dyslexia course. Many people were asking me exactly what it's about, who's it for, and we wanted to be really clear. It's designed for people who have just found out they're dyslexic or are just in the process of coming to terms with what it means, and they want someone to help guide them and understand that a bit more and learn how to use your brain to better serve you, your goals, your life, your success, all that cool stuff. Now, we've just opened up the course to be done at any time, which is really, really awesome. It means you can jump on, you can do the course. It's all self-guided. It's using a brand new app that we only set up a few months ago, and it's been working really, really well. So dive onto the link at the bottom of this podcast if you're interested. Have a little look. We're running a special to kick off this new way of launching the course. Until next time.